Welcome to iGrad's College Admin Podcast, bringing you interviews with key trendsetters in financial aid and financial literacy with your host, Chris Alban.
Okay, so I'm Chris Alban with iGrad, and I'm speaking to Tom Kokas at Berklee College. And I had the pleasure of seeing Tom present recently in Washington, D.C. for an AppSku default management conference. And I thought what he was doing was some very groundbreaking things, had some very innovative ideas that have already been put into place. And I really thought some other schools could kind of benefit from some of the ideas that he's had and some of the successes that they're having there at Berklee College. So, Tom, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
No problem. The first thing I kind of wanted to get into is just hear a little bit about you, how long you've been at Berklee College, and a little bit about how you got there.
Sure. Well, I'll be closing. I'm almost 3 years at Berklee College in my current position as Director of Student Financial Literacy. And how I got here was, I was approached by my supervisor, who I've known for a number of years, and he was entertaining the idea of creating a team here at Berklee to do outbound to borrowers to help them avert default, but also to provide workshops and counseling services to current students to help them better understand their student loan obligations, and as well as talk about other personal finance topics. So it sounded like a really exciting opportunity. So I decided to come on board and essentially start from the ground up. So that's how I got here.
Now, it sounds like kind of what you're doing there, and some other schools have done similar things, is a combination of a proactive and a reactive approach. The reactive being, the outbound calling to the students that you've found have problems with their loans. They're delinquent. Obviously, not students, but they're out of school by that point. But also a proactive approach with these workshops, and I'm assuming those are kind of more of the financial literacy type stuff that's in your position title. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. Ideally, if we do our job on the upfront proactive counseling and providing information, we should see less activity in terms of the reactive. People. Because they have the equipment to manage their loans effectively, they're less likely to become delinquent on payments and at risk of being at default. So yeah, it's a little of both.
Okay. Now, what kind of things are you measuring there? Are you looking strictly at default and delinquency, or are there any other metrics that you're kind of focusing on and setting goals towards?
Well, yeah, I think the key things for us are how our efforts are impacting our rates. But we're that's a metric that we can sort of track. It's not completely accurate, but there is a way to track it. But also, we wanted to bring a value in terms of customer service to Berklee students. I mean, I think what we're doing is unique. We're not the only ones, and it's starting to become a trend in providing these kind of workshops and more proactive approach to student debt. So in that capacity, I mean, again, that's not something we can measure, but we certainly get a lot of thank yous and words of appreciation from students for the information that we've been able to provide them.
Okay. Now, what we kind of do, and the approach we kind of have, is we'll test out a lot of different things and kind of measure what's working, what's not, and every so often we'll test something out and we'll think we're just throwing it in basically to see. We don't really think it's going to be that effective, and it turns out to be it gets a lot of traction, so we start to put more focus onto building that out. So, what's one thing that you would say that you've kind of put in place that has overperformed your expectations?
I would say the database that we are working from has helped simplify our workload tremendously and has made us much more effective. Before we had the database, we were working, you know, with all the various servicer reports. So there were 3-4 reports, and it just was very difficult for the reps to manage all that. So now we, you know, all that is sort of coalesced into the database, so we have one source to do our outbound activity from and to measure it. So that's really helped us, you know, it helped make us more effective. We were reaching more borrowers, helping more borrowers. So it was, you know, the numbers from when we before we started to when we initially implemented the database, they jumped dramatically, you know, in terms of number of default diversions. So that certainly has been, you know, the key element in our success to date.
So this, and I remember this a little bit from the presentation, the database you're speaking about, so that's pulling in information from, is it from NSLDS reports and
yeah.
data?
No, it's, well, yeah, NSLDS, the delinquency reports from NSLDS, you know, they're the main source of our data, but we've been also been pulling from two guarantors, New York and New Jersey, to get information on FFELP loans that are still outstanding that may be delinquent. So so it's three sources, but that's sort of winnowing down to NSLDS as the other, you know, as we move through the cohorts, we'll see fewer and fewer FFELP loans out there. So, you know, at some point, I guess we're going to get all our data from NSLDS.
Okay. And how many people do you have working on this, and what results have you seen?
Staff, including myself and my associate, we're at 5 right now. Each person is assigned a piece of a cohort, if you will, to work. So they're responsible for doing all the outbound phone calls, sending out emails, and you know, obviously responding back as people call in. You know, again, it's been very effective because before we had 3 or 4 sources, separate sources of data on delinquencies that we had to go to. So it was very hard for the reps to keep track of all that. So now they don't have to because it's all in the database. And, you know, as a result, they've become a lot more effective in spending the time on things that, you know, will make us effective, namely the outbound. So we've seen, you know, their numbers are, in terms of what we call cures or default diversions, have increased substantially because they're more focused on those issues.
Okay. And the 5 people you say are working on this, are they working full-time, part-time?
Full-time.
Full-time? Okay.
Yep.
And are those kind of student workers, or just strictly, you know, you found them outside of the school?
Well, they're full-time professionals. We had a couple of internal candidates that we brought on board, and then we, you know, hired folks through a search and interview process. They do more than just the outbounds. There's a lot of, you know, presentations that are made, exit interview presentations, financial literacy workshops. So, you know, we needed folks who had, you know, some expertise in presenting on those topics, as well as doing the outbound. So they're full-time professionals.
So they're not doing the outbound full-time. They're full-time workers doing a lot of different things.
Correct.
Gotcha. So what, if you had to just give a ballpark percentage of the time that they're attributing towards the outbound calling, you know,
I would say three quarters of their time.
Okay. You know, let's say there's another school that's looking to set up a similar program, you know, considering the fact that you've set this up, and I'm sure you've had your share of trials and tribulations, what's the one piece of advice you would give to someone in that situation so that either they didn't make the same mistake as you, or, you know, they got to from point A to point B a little bit quicker?
Get a sense of what the expectation is from the institution at large for what, you know, you're charged to do. you know, to what extent will you, you know, be focusing on the outbound to delinquents, and to what degree, how much would you be doing on the proactive side, and get a good sense of that, because you know, this will only work if you have a comprehensive strategy, and that means you should devote as ideally equal time to both. And also, I think it's important on the you know, preventative side to make to get buy-in on making it a requirement for students to attend or participate in whatever workshops or things of that sort. Because if they don't show up, you know, you can, and that's been our challenge. I mean, we don't, it's not required. So you know, it, turnout is a challenge. If you can get buy-in from the institution to make it mandatory, I think that would be key.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. In fact, one thing I say in a lot of my presentations is that even if you run the most successful incentive campaign out there and you somehow, by some miracle, get 80% of your students to go through, a, say, a financial literacy course because you've incentivized it and promoted it properly,
mm-hmm.
typically that 20% that had absolutely no interest that were that are going to be the bigger problems in the future anyway.
Yep.
Just because they don't have that interest. So I completely agree that it, you know, at least some small part has to be made mandatory to get these students to at least accept the fact that this is something they need to pay attention to going down the road.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree.
So, you know, where I kind of started with this is I was asking you if there's one thing that has kind of overperformed your expectations. One thing we found is that every once in a while we'll, we have this great idea and what we think is really great, and it, you know, we launch it and it just kind of flops and it backfires. Not necessarily backfires, but, you know, we kind of expected it to perform a lot better than it did. So is there anything that you've kind of tried that you thought was going to be a lot more successful that, you know, didn't turn out working that way?
Yeah, I would say, you know, everybody says, you know, you need to get on the social media bandwagon and put stuff out on Facebook and put and I tried, and my experience with Facebook in posting information was that there was really not much, if any, interest from the students about that information. So, you know, I think we need to revisit that assumption about, you know, just putting something on Facebook will solve all your problems, or you'll get the interest that, you know, you'll get some interest. My experience has been it's not been that successful. So that was a disappointment.
Yeah, it's not the magic pill that, you know, some of these sites claim it is to be. And, you know, it's different for every student population. Every school is different. I mean, we've definitely noticed you need to get to that point of traction where you have an engaged audience. But to get to that point can take, you know, a full-time staff in order to do that and grow that.
Mm-hmm.
Not this magic button that you just press and turn on social media and all of a sudden it's out there.
Yeah, no, agreed.
So what knowledge or skill outside your traditional scope of work or traditional job descriptions has helped you the most in your current position?
Well, I do have a background in working in student lending. I worked for years at Sallie Mae, also at Ed Fund. So I have, you know, some. I had a good background in student lending. I think my experience as a working in a guarantee agent, because they do a lot of, or they used to do a lot of the things we currently do, namely the you know, delinquency prevention efforts or default prevention efforts. So you know, that helped in terms of structuring, helping me get a, you know, an idea of how we wanted to structure this and put it together. So.
And what's one resource that you would recommend to other people in the industry, whether it be associations like, you know, NAFSA or I guess it's NSHARE now, not NSHELP anymore. Specific websites or listservs or LinkedIn groups. You know, we hear a lot of different success in various places. So I was wondering if you had any success with those or maybe something completely outside that realm.
Well, I think the trade association, APSCU, is a good forum because they focus on our sector, and because of that they understand the needs of the sector. So the fact that they're willing to host a whole symposium on default prevention that shows a sensitivity to the issue for their sector. So, I think the more working with those associations has been very helpful. You get great ideas from schools about what they're doing, and you're able, like I did, to share what we've been doing. So it's a nice forum to trade ideas and share war stories.
And one of the other things I noticed in your presentation at the APSCU conference was talking about your efforts in exit counseling. And I really liked what you guys are doing as far as providing it in a variety of formats.
Mm-hmm.
Could you talk a little bit about the different types of things you're doing with exit counseling?
Sure. Well, we do two sort of formats. We do the traditional presentation where we send out invitations to the graduating class, and they choose from a number of workshops that we're offering, and then we go and present. And they have always have been very successful. I mean, we only get really positive feedback from them. So that we do. We're a quarter-based school, so we'll do about every quarter. I think we do about 35 workshops for the 7 campuses. And then for our online school, we do webcasts because really that's the only forum that's convenient for them. And we'll do 2 webcasts per quarter for the online population. And, very receptive, very positive feedback we get in the web environment as well. And we try to, obviously, because our student body in the online school is an older population, most of them are working, we'll typically have those like later in the day, like from 6 to 7.
Okay. So those webcasts they're all live.
Right. Yeah. We have a limit. I think it's 25 is the number of people who can come to the webcast. And then, the presenter, I did one last week, in fact. We use the same presentation we use at the workshop, and it's live voices. We use same time to, share the presentation with the group.
Do you know what platform you're using? Is it GoToMeeting or WebEx? Or
it's part of Lotus Notes. It's called Same Time.
Okay.
We used to be on GoToMeeting, but we changed.
It sounds like all of the exit counseling efforts are in some way it's a live presenter or a live administrator.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else that you do to kind of cater to students that have difficulty making it to one of the scheduled sessions?
For the exits, if they don't attend a session, what we do is mail them out a packet of information. And we also, in a letter enclosed with the packet, we reference the NSLDS exit website. So if they want to go online and do an online counseling session, they can. And we get information on who completed the exits online. So that's another option for them. And within the packet, we send them pretty much all the information that we distribute during any live presentation, so they have that information available if they can't make the online webcast. So we try to appeal to all the different folks.
So you do the live setting, you do the give them the option for the online counseling through the department, and the written information as well.
Right.
Sounds like you're pretty much covering all the bases there. And I think I asked at the end of the presentation if you had done any kind of tracking to see if there's any kind of preferences from the students on, you know, which has the higher completion rates. And I think you said you hadn't really implemented that just yet. Is that the case, or have you started to see trends?
Well, I typically for the, you know, we're at a point now where we're getting about a little over 100 people participate either in a webcast or in a live session, which is, if you were to break that out in percentage terms, for the number of grads per quarter, we're at about 15 to 20% participation rate, which I don't think is that bad. But I think we certainly seem to get a better turnout with the live, you know, workshop face-to-face presentations. We offer more of them, so there's greater flexibility. I would say out of the 100 we get, maybe 80 are from the live and 20 are the webcast.
Was there, just out of curiosity, was there a specific reason you were putting all this effort into the live administrator base? Did you have an idea that those were going to be more effective, or did you, you know, kind of poll your students, or is that just personal preference?
We wanted to get more in their face, if you will, because I think you know, this over reliance on the web and web based services to deliver this information is good. It's easier. It's more efficient. But I think something gets lost for the student. I think the level of engagement in a face to face setting is so much more, at least in my experience, so much more tangible. You know, you can see them. The aha buttons going, you know, the aha moments, and it's very interactive. So, I mean, I'm a little old school in that sense. I think we need to go back to that more, because I think it's more effective now, especially now when people are borrowing so much more money.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, what we're kind of noticing is that with this influx of social media and all this online content, it's starting to a lot of schools are jumping on that bandwagon with different various efforts, and you're kind of starting to lose that direct touch with the student, and that's actually becoming even more powerful because the students are so used to now mm-hmm. getting bombarded with online information and different portals that their school is sending them to. So I think in a way that's good because it gives you the opportunity. If you can actually have that direct contact with the students, it actually it resonates a lot more than maybe 10, 15 years ago when there wasn't such a significant online presence.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, that's, people would, or it's a reaction to all the, like you said, the bombardment of content they're getting. And, you know, I've seen students take the online counseling sessions, and you can tell that they're just reading it to get through it as opposed to understanding what they're reading.
Exactly. There's actually at an event, I was at a CASFA event just last week, and one of the presenters there said he just recently went through the Department of Education's exit counseling in the Spanish version. In 4 minutes, he got through it, and he's never taken a Spanish lesson in his life, doesn't know Spanish. So mm-hmm. it goes to show, it's if you're trying to just get through it, it's not that hard to get through it. And he obviously didn't pick up any information from it if he didn't understand Spanish. So,
right. Yeah, people just click the buttons and click the right button and just move it forward, you know, without reading anything.
Exactly. I think that was our line of thinking too. We actually just finished producing a new exit counseling product, and you know, one of our reasons for that is a lot of the online stuff that's available now, we don't think it's that effective. We don't think there's a lot of retention, the students actually retaining that information. So what we've actually done, the way we format it, is completely video-based, and it's it shows various clips of students or ex-students, and you know, talking about the mistakes they made with their student loan, or you know, mm-hmm. wish they paid more attention, or you know, the consequences of defaulting. So it kind of has those scare tactics built in that students can relate to.
Right.
And, you know, we're very pleased with it, but at the same time, I can see, you know, if you have the ability to have some direct interaction with the students, that's always going to be more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I've heard some kind of having some success with is just finding some upper-level kind of financial literacy champions. Like, if you search, you will find people within your organization that are extremely passionate about financial literacy. And the surprising thing is a lot of times you have to look outside the natural departments that you think would be a fit for that. But obviously, if you can find senior-level buy-in, whether it's, you know, in a direct line for your department or not, that's going to be very powerful in terms of getting things done and getting other people on the same boat.
Right.
If you didn't have any budget constraints whatsoever and you had all the time in the world, what would be your ideal plan?
Well, to have a staff large enough to implement a program where we did, you know, that kind of counseling, that proactive counseling where everybody's required. Because right now, if you know, if the school was to say, okay, you can do it with a staff of five for six campuses with classes starting every 3 months, it would be almost impossible to do, you know. Other things that we do would not get done. So, I mean, it's definitely more staff would be of, you know, certainly have helped to implement the strategy.
And I think what you'll find, too, is as you start shifting more of the focus towards the proactive approach, it's going to free up more time on the follow-up, the reactive
right.
side.
So, exactly, yeah.
It's almost like, you know, it may be 75% reactive, 25% proactive now, but you know, if another school's in the same situation, it may be, maybe they develop a plan where, you know, every 6 months they try to take an extra 5 or 10% and shift it to the proactive side. But obviously, I am always a big fan of tracking and metrics as well. So that kind of thing really helps in those types of proposals that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
If you're ever getting any kind of pushback on, you know, making something mandatory or reallocating the budget, having metrics in place, even if it's a small kind of beta test with a group of students, if you can show that these proactive efforts are having an effect at your institution, you're going to get a much easier road in terms of trying to get what you want.
Right.
All right, Tom. Well, that's all the time that we have for this week. Thank you again to Tom Kokas, Director of Student Financial Literacy at Berklee College. It was great speaking with you, and keep an eye out here at igrad.com for future podcasts. If you have an idea for a podcast or have a college administrator to suggest for one, send us a shout at pr@igrad.com.
You've been listening to iGrad's College Admin Podcast. Visit us at www.igrad.com for more financial literacy and financial aid resources. And subscribe to us on iTunes for more interviews with college trendsetters.